it's about time to start our Q&A time. So everyone wants to come on in, find their seats again, or move up closer. There are some empty seats up front if you want to come up a little bit closer. Just a little bit about how the Q&A will work tonight. If this is your first Cafe Sci, this might be a little bit strange. We have two wireless microphones that will circle the auditorium tonight. Margot and Sanford each have one of those microphones. So if you have a question, you're going to flag one of them down, and they'll come to you so you can ask your questions, so we can have it microphone so everybody can hear it, and so it can be recorded for our podcast, which is available on iTunes. If you search for Carnegie Science Center, you'll find the Cafe Sci podcast. You can listen to this talk again later, since you loved it so much. So make sure you speak into the microphone. We do ask that you keep your questions kind of short and to the point. We all want to be out of here by 9 o'clock, if possible. And we ask that you ask one question until everybody's had a chance to ask their questions, and then we'll go back for seconds. So Margot and Sanford will alternate between the upper and lower sections. So if it looks like they're ignoring you, it's just because they kind of have to wait and go back and forth. So don't be offended if they don't come right away. They're kind of keeping an eye on both sections and keeping it flowing. So I think that's it. Do we have our first question, Margot Sanford? And we'll turn it back over to Regina.
Thanks. So I was looking at touring bikes a while ago, and when I grew up, touring bikes always had raked front forks. These days, the front forks seem to be completely straight.
Okay, wait, can you speak a little bit louder? Because I think your microphone's not on.
These days, front forks seem to be completely straight. The rake seems to be going. I wondered if you could comment, please.
Okay, just repeat the question again. I'm sorry. Your accent's great, but I'm losing the question.
All right, here's the question. Touring bikes in the 70s had a lot of rake to the front fork.
Oh, yeah, the rake? Yep.
And it seems to have gone away now that the forks all seem to have gone straight. Do you have any rational explanation for that?
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. It's awful. Forks do seem to have less and less rake. And it is, you know, I think a lot of manufacturers are trying to make sure that the bike has the right amount of trail. But trail really doesn't mean much. The caster angle means more. One thing, there are still some bikes that do have the right amount of rake, but what you may be seeing, and I'll draw this. All right, there's a fork right there. And the question that's being asked is this length here. It's called a rake. It's a perpendicular distance. And what he's saying is, man, forks used to look kind of like that. They really had some rake in them. And now they just kind of like that. And some of them, some forks are totally straight. They go like this, and they're not coming off of the fork crown in a perpendicular fashion. They're angled right out of the fork crown, but they still have a rake. But it's a lot cheaper to do something straight than to put a rake in it. I mean, it has it from a physical standpoint. But what you don't see is you don't see this rake that takes that occurs at the very last minute. The rake seems to be more gradual like this. And I think that might have a lot to do with material. I mean, carbon fiber, for instance, has very different properties than steel does. The neat thing about steel is when you built a fork like this where the rake all happened at the end, it's like a little shock absorber. It's going bump, 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 bump. As you go over the bumps, it's giving the bike a nice resilient feel. Whereas with carbon fiber, a lot of that can be built in to the layup of the fibers and all that. It's a different concept altogether. But in general, I think the movement has been away from, say, a 6-centimeter rake or whatever, down to more like 4, 5 at the longest. Next.
Okay. Okay, great. Hi, Ms. Terry. I just want to let you know, I don't ride bikes at all, but I have a great appreciation for it, and I've brought to my two friends who ride bikes all the time, because I was like, you totally have to hear this. But what I'm really, really interested in, besides everything that you said was very interesting to me, but what's more interesting to me is obviously you were a big part of putting the women's biking industry and the women's biking movement on the map. And I was wondering if you could expound a little bit about what it was like at that time period when you were starting to say, hey, this should be different than what's the traditional biking industry and biking movement, what that was like to deal with that at the time.
Okay, well, I think kind of as I referred to a little bit, at that time it was the woman hear me roar kind of philosophy. So certainly on the consumer end, there was an awful lot of support for that. I think the industry was a little bit slow to embrace it at first. I mean, I can remember going into a local bike shop in Rochester just to try and get a feel for what the owner of the shop thought of this hand-built bike that I had made for women with nice Shimano component group on it, lugged steel frame that retailed for $600. And his response was, no woman will ever spend $600 for a bike. And now the response is, no woman will ever spend $3,500 for a bike, because that's about what that bike costs now. But the industry, I think in a way, kind of got dragged kicking and screaming into paying attention to the women's market. We, as a small company, had such phenomenal success. We go to trade shows, and women were going into shops demanding the bikes, so dealers felt like they had to bring them in. And shortly on the heels of that, then the really large manufacturers started to get involved in it, because I think they were looking for more ways to grow their business, and hey, there's that whole women's market out there. Maybe there is something to that. I don't know if they've done a really great job with it. I have this terrible feeling that it's starting to turn around and come back to, you know, unisex wasn't all that bad, because some of these designs are sure starting to look like they're headed back in that direction. So I still find it very frustrating, I think, especially when I talk to women one-on-one and then I look at the industry. I mean, there are too many just kind of crazy horror stories that it just doesn't add up right. So I think it has a long way to go, but anything's better than nothing, I suppose.
I'm 4'11", and I have a very difficult time finding a bike. Now, 6 or 7 years ago, I went hunting for a Terry bike because I had a girlfriend who had one. I couldn't find one. Where do you buy them?
Well, there's no easy question to that, because I can tell you right off the bat that right now, I no longer work for Terry Bicycles. I have my own company that strictly does the hand-built line of bicycles for women. They're not stocked by any dealer. I work one-on-one with every one of my customers and sell directly. The company Terry Precision Bicycles, 3 years ago, entered into a licensing arrangement with a company in Philadelphia. It's the same company that sells Fuji, Kestrel, Breezer bikes, the mountain bike. And they were not successful at all in getting dealers to stock these bikes. I mean, we had, at our high point, maybe 25 dealers in the United States who stocked those bikes. And that licensing arrangement will end this year. So the only Terry bikes that are going to be available will be from me. And obviously, I'm not mainstream when I'm building hand-built bikes at that price point. Unfortunately, I wish I were. But they are very difficult to find. It's a sad thing. I'm glad I'm able to do what I'm able to do. But it's frustrating that they didn't work out for the company, Terry. But you can always come to me. And I'll tell you, more people go on eBay, Craigslist. They're digging these bikes up like crazy. And I get these emails, I found this bike. Tell me all about it. And I'm glad to tell you everything I know and help you with the fit. But you won't find them stocked. I can tell you that. But I mean, you right now, to the extent that this company in Philadelphia still has inventory, any dealer can buy from them. But the dealer's attitude is always, look, I've got Cannondale, I've got Trek, I've got Schwinn. Why do I need Terry?
I'm 4'11", I can tell you why.
Yeah, as did that yellow bike tell a lot of 4'11 people, right? So... mechanical engineering. Who asked that question? Raise your hand. Ah, way up there. Yeah, mechanical engineering. 1980. Did you go to CMU? No kidding. In mechanical engineering? Holy cow. I rode my bike every single day. Every single day. Yeah. Great school.
I'm about to start shopping for my first bike since high school, and I'm in that average 5.4, 5.5 range. I want to do recreational, maybe up to 15-mile rides at a time on reasonably flat terrain.
Good luck.
trails. We like trails. I'm feeling like there's a lot of conflicting advice out there as far as, you know, the sloping top tubes versus the straight top tubes, how high the pedals, you know, how whether I should be able to stand on my tiptoes or stand flat on the ground. I mean, can you offer just maybe some basic tips for those of us who are really just trying to get into a first bike? Just some things that we should be thinking about and aiming for. And I hope that there are some other people who feel that way, so it's not just for me, but thank you.
Yeah, one thing I could say, I mean, about tippy toes or flat-footed or whatever, when you are on the saddle, when the saddle has been adjusted at the correct height, you shouldn't be able to put your feet flat on the ground while you're on the saddle. The saddle is way too low if that's the case. I know, you know, with kids or something, maybe that's common. Your tippy toes, yeah, but definitely not flat-footed. The saddle should be at such a height that when you're the leg that's in the lowest part of the stroke still has a slight bend to the knee, a very slight bend. First of all, you got to find the right bike shop. That is absolutely key. It's got to be a shop where you feel like you're welcome, where there's someone there who's going to spend time with you, not somebody who just looks at you when you walk in the door and go, you're a hybrid customer. End of discussion. You know, he should be showing you a little bit of everything, even if you're, you know, you need to know what's available. And the shop should be willing to fit the bike as much as they can before you take it out for a test ride, the height of the saddle, the handlebars, maybe the tilt of the handlebars. You know, if it's a case of just handing you the bike and saying good luck, it might be the perfect bike, but you may never know because it's just not been adjusted properly. I wouldn't worry about whether or not the top tube is level or it's sloping. The key thing is how do you feel when you're riding it? Are you comfortable? And again, that should go back to the upper body situation. Do you feel really stretched out? I had one customer who told me she went into a bike shop and she's riding the bike around. She said to the guy, I am like so stretched out. This can't be right. And he said, you'll get used to it. Just look up. I said, I think you should leave right away. You know, but worry about that line. You'll get used to it. Some things you just don't get used to, and I think your intuition is really, really important. And this is a very general statement. I mean, there are a lot of exceptions to it, but I've often found that smaller bike shops that have a sole proprietor or just a couple of people working there are sometimes the best because they're really keen and interested in what they're doing, and they really want to serve the customer. And they're competing against some mega shop, and so they've really got to do it right to make things work. You know, and then read stuff. You know, just there's confusing stuff on the internet for sure, but, you know, the more you read, the more it starts to fall into place. Or send me an email if you have a question. I'll be glad to help. You're welcome.
I ride a Specialized Crossroads comfort bike, and it doesn't have the crossbar because it's almost like a U.
Yep.
I'm experiencing, at an hour of riding, numbness in my leg, in my toes, both mm-hmm. feet. And I'm trying to keep up with a group that's doing maybe 10, 12 miles an hour. I feel like I'm working as hard as they are, but I'm falling further and further behind. Am I defeating the purpose on being on that kind of a bike? Is that...
Well, the bike may have something to do with that. I'm wondering about the numbness in the toes, though. What kind of shoes do you wear?
I've been told that I'm probably wearing the wrong shoe.
It's just an
athletic shoe, and it's very flexible.
That's probably part of the problem right there. It really should have a very stiff sole so that you're not wasting your time flexing your feet around the pedals. I would strongly recommend investigating clipless pedals.
Okay.
Where you have the cleat in the bottom of the shoe and you just clip in, you'd be amazed at how much more efficient you are. First of all, you're never worried about your feet falling off the pedals because that ain't going to happen.
Okay.
And so you can concentrate more on muscle groups and the pedal stroke, that kind of thing. certainly, you know, the bike could have something to do with it, but weight on a, I mean, assuming you've got decent tires, not a lot of rolling resistance, but just the weight of the bicycle on a flat surface, not a big deal.
Okay.
You know, hills can be a little something else, but you could certainly improve upon that situation for sure. But first, I'd get the shoe issue down and see how much you pick up doing that, and then start looking into maybe different tires, different wheels, or a different bike.
I think they're 750s. Does that sound right? 750 says on the tire. Would that be the right side?
It's probably 700C, and it should be stamped on the tire somewhere.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll see something like, depending on how wide it is, two numbers, a dash, and then 622. 622 is a 700C.
Okay.
We could spend an hour here on dimensions of tires. But I would say, given that it's a Specialized, either it's a 26-inch mountain tire or it's a 700C tire,
okay.
One or the other.
Because I had back surgery as a younger woman, so I can't really be in that position.
Right.
So
How tall are you?
About 5'7"-ish.
Oh, see, you're lucky. That's good. You're on the right track right there, because
okay.
That opens up a lot of stuff to you.
Okay.
A lot of stuff.
Because they said maybe I was talking to the bike shop people, and they said, well, maybe you need to try. And it was a bike that was back to the crossbar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I didn't know whether maybe it's time to get the big girl bike and get off that one now that I'm more comfortable riding.
Well,
I'll try the shoe. I'll try new shoes.
I'd start there, and
okay.
then...
Not the seat so much, because I went online trying to find out. Some people were saying it's the
seat. I guess
seat.
If it's really cushy and, you know, you're like bouncing up and down
it's
on
got
it,
springs.
That's
and it's
very
really
inefficient.
Wide.
The best saddles in the world are Brooks saddles, which are, seriously, that describes the saddle, but it kind of breaks into you and you break into it over time, and it's amazingly efficient and comfortable in the long run. But most saddles aren't real squishy, but yeah, if you could get away from some of the squish, I'm sure that would help.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hi. I have a question which is, I think, follow-up with what somebody else asked, but it seems that a lot of what women's bikes are now, and even also like bike wear, is usually just like a pink collar or like a female collar or just a smaller, not better geometry, just a smaller or like cheaper parts, and they call like manufacturers like, you know, the women's, you know, option bike, which, you know, when you start thinking about it, is, you know, I think kind of insulting to some degree, unless you're competing and then you are willing to spend money. But I think if you're, you know, a woman trying to get started riding, you know, it's kind of difficult. What are your opinions? Because it seems like you started something very revolutionary when you started, and now it's almost like, we'll just throw anything at you because you guys have the money, but the brains that I think are already in the market are not applying it.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you're finding some of the bicycle designs maybe a little bit insulting?
Not no manufacturers around here. I've had a lot of problem finding bikes my size, and most of my bikes are bikes and they're like older, and like usually the handlebars are huge. I cannot hit the brakes, and it's taking me some time. But when I try to look for women's bikes, it's usually like they just change the color or the cranks or everything. It's just like the low end.
Uh-huh,
and
Now, when you say women's bikes, you're not talking about a traditional women's design, or are you?
Well, sometimes also, like, is the women's bike, it's just,
yeah.
you know, they just made it the angle. And I just want to say, like, what is your opinion? Is that something because women are not either educated or asking the right questions? Or, because I was thinking that manufacturers, you know, there should be, like, this is what we know due to engineering and science, and this works better for you, but yet we're just going to kind of like put this in front of it and put a flower on it or paint a thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then, you know, you're going to go for it because, oh, it's women's, and then you think that's going to be the right thing for me, when we know that there's more factors, obviously. But what is your opinion on that? And maybe what can one do to try to push the industry, and what can, you know, manufacturers, especially now that more women are, you know, becoming 50% of people riding their bikes on the streets?
I think you're right about some of it. I think it depends on where the price point falls for the bike, as to when the manufacturer starts getting a little bit more serious about the mechanics of the bike and the look of the bike and all that. Certainly if you look at companies like Cannondale and Specialized, when you get up into price points that are over, say, $1,500, they've got some fairly serious machines. I mean, they're pretty comparable to their men's machines. As well they should be. They're sponsoring some incredible female racers right now, and those women aren't going to want to be on a hunk of junk. But I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, especially the woman who wants a woman's bike. She doesn't want the crossbar. She wants a woman's bike. Why is she being stuck with something that weighs 35 pounds and is painted pink with flowers? There is an awful lot of that going on for sure. And it's always been my feeling that companies who would offer good quality women's bikes, not super expensive ones, but just good, nice women's bikes, would do incredibly well. That market is not being served well at all. But, you know, bike industry, to some extent, it's almost like GM. Who's the chairman of GM who said, by God, they'll buy what we build? And there's a lot of that going on in the bike industry. This is what we want to build. This is where we're making the money. This is what you got to buy. So, yeah, your point's well taken.
I just want to second that. It seems odd to me that, you know, there is such a huge market, and you clearly laid out why you would design it a certain way and why that doesn't take off as a mystery to me. I'm baffled. I'm sorry.
I hear you.
Advocate for us then. How do we be annoying?
If I had the answer to that, it'd be a totally different situation. I think one of the things I would do to advocate it, I think, would be to work through groups like the League of American Bicyclists, which has a very, very strong up-and-coming women's side of that organization. There's some really, really strong people there doing some neat stuff. And, you know, there's a women's bike club here in Pittsburgh, I understand. And, you know, I think it pays for bike clubs like that to say things to manufacturers, to let their feelings be known, to support dealers who can kind of come around to that kind of thinking. It's a tough nut to crack. Look, it's a man's world. I mean, I hate to say that, but it still is very much a man's world. And let's start a bike company. How about that?
This isn't my question, but I just got one of your saddles, and I'm very happy with it so far.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
My question is... I get more power from drop handlebars
than
a road bike, but I have neck problems, which seem to be somewhat better with flat handlebars, and I wonder if there's any compromise that I could still ride a road bike and lessen the pain in my neck.
I think, you know, you're definitely going to get more power out of the drop bars. You're also going to get a lot more hand positions from the drop bars.
Right. Alternative.
However, there are a lot of different shapes in handlebars. And you may find that simply by playing around with different shapes, you're able to land on something that helps with the neck issue. The other thing that I would look into as well is possibly doing some strengthening exercises to help, certainly with core, for sure, to see if that helps a little bit with the neck issue. I mean, if it's arthritis or something like that, that can be a whole different game. But, you know, maybe as you get older, you start to lose strength, and it's mostly arthritis, yeah. Yeah. I'd still play around a little bit, I think, with the hand position. I mean, certainly, selective time to ride the drops. When you ride the drops, are you really in the drops? Down in them? You're in the hooks or on the hoods? I would try maybe a shorter stem to just bring it a little bit closer or taller so that your neck's not quite in the same position. I mean, you're still not going to get quite the strength. Some of that strength, again, is coming from the glutes, for sure, just because of the position you're in. And to some extent, when you get a little bit older, certain things get sacrificed. Hopefully never the enjoyment of the ride, but, you know.
Hi. If I can just respond to the advocacy question. In my experience, when you go into a shop, if you ask if they have something, it's powerful. And because they pass that up to the management level and they say customers are asking for this, and that gets passed on to manufacturers. So, I mean, I think the more that you speak up in general, so if you people speak up, and when you do, your voice is powerful. So I would start as a consumer. That's just my suggestion. And then my question, I hope this doesn't only apply to me, so I'm not wasting everybody else's time, but I had to stop biking for a few years because hills were destroying my knees. And I went out and got an aluminum bike that was more adjustable and started to do strictly rails to trails, and I'm fine. But as soon as I hit a hill, my knees are absolutely destroyed. Like, I can't walk. If I do it a whole summer, I can't walk, you know. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice for me about anything I can do to address that issue. I mean, I'm left out of so many rides because I can't handle hills.
It's hard to be in Pittsburgh when you can't do hills, isn't it? I started riding here, and I can't do hills anymore since Rochester. But certainly, I mean, I would... The one side of it is certainly, what does your doctor say about it? I mean, is there something going on? They don't know. But so it's not arthritis, it's not... So then the next thing I say is, what kind of gears are you pushing when you're going up these hills? What's your cadence? And what is that? Do you know offhand? Like, how many teeth on the front and how many teeth on the back? It's a one-to-one?
It's in one and one. I don't know.
Oh, it's in one and one. Triple crankset, I imagine, on the front, not a double. Without knowing what the numbers are, it's hard to tell, but I can tell you, you can get gears low enough on a bike that the issue is, can you go fast enough to keep from falling over when you're going up a hill? And even road bikes, I mean, some road bikes, there's some constraints a little bit, say a road bike as opposed to a real hardcore touring bike. You can still put long cage rear derailleurs on them and have them work with... Do you have flat handlebars or drop? Flat. So you're probably pretty low, but, you know, I would check with your bike shop and see how much lower you can go. I mean, you could go down to a 22 on the front matched with a 34, even 36 on the back. That is a heck of a low gear. And when you're going up these hills, like, what is your cadence? I mean, in your past, when you were riding like crazy... Were you a masher or a spinner?
I don't know what that means. All I know is everybody else is like waiting.
Yeah. So, but on the flats, you're okay? You can stick with everybody? Yeah, okay. I would look into the gearing a little bit for sure. And then, I mean, I'd also, this sounds crazy, but I've become such a devotee of stuff like core strength, you know, abs and lower back and all that, because a strong core is the platform from which your legs can exert a lot of force. On the flat, you don't notice it so much, but when you're on the hills, if your legs aren't working against something that gives them a good platform, you're not getting really the full use out of your legs. So I think that combination. But I would check with your shop and say, okay, look, am I as low as I can go? What's going on here? Yeah, good luck with that. That's frustrating.
So I have a comment around the advocacy and then a question around materials for you. So on the advocacy side, Nancy and I are both very active bicyclists in the city, and we actually have a women's bike clinic July 20th, so I'm going to give a plug for that. There's a Facebook event at the Oval in Washington, and that's how I got started racing bikes. I race with a local group here. And the women's support in the Pittsburgh area is growing every single year. They have women-specific races now, which they did not have 5 years ago. So it's really exciting to see. So I would love to talk to you.
And we'll go uphill with you and watch what you're doing and try to help you. Or look at your feet.
Good.
Absolutely, because I built confidence in how to handle my bike, and now I feel much more confident on the road. So, plug for that. The question I have for you is around materials. So when I start looking at things on the internet, there's a million different alloys of aluminum and stainless steels for different reasons. Can you speak to a little bit of the mystery of the alloys and what's important, what's not so important to pay attention to?
There is only one material, and that's steel. We are in Pittsburgh, are we not? There are a lot of good choices. In the beginning, it was just steel, and then aluminum became more and more popular, and then carbon fiber really took over. Titanium is another one, too. Very, very expensive. But here's the deal. It's hard to find steel being used properly in anything but really nice high-end bikes. If it's used in a lesser bike, it's usually fairly heavy. Jamis has done a good job of avoiding that. Carbon fiber is everywhere at virtually every price point. It's a wonderful material because it can be tweaked depending on the properties you want. Where do you want stiffness? Where do you want comfort? The downside of carbon fiber can be that it can be fragile. I mean, if you go out in a steel bike and you fall and hit a curb and get a ding in your top tube, you're going to be able to get home. If you do that in carbon fiber, you may have a catastrophic failure on the way home. So you want to watch out for things like that. I think of materials like steel and titanium as being forever bikes. I think of carbon fiber as, this is my ride for the next couple of years, and then I'm going to move to the next step. And then there's aluminum. And I have to be perfectly frank with you, I've never been a big fan of aluminum. I personally have had too many issues with it in manufacturing. I don't like the ride qualities of aluminum. I don't like the longevity of aluminum. I don't like the fatigue issues of aluminum. But it's making a little bit of a comeback now, and that's because the prices for carbon fiber apparently are starting to go up. Manufacturers are going, there's this great material called aluminum. Let's try that. So, if I had to recommend, I would say steel if you can find it in the price point, or carbon fiber, for sure. And stainless steel, you mentioned, that will be way up here on price point, but it will be very nice.
I want to know what your philosophy on crank length is.
Crank arm length.
Pardon?
Crank arm length.
Crank length. Okay. How do you determine what length you want to use for men and women?
Well, practically speaking, we don't give you a whole lot of options, we being Shimano and some of the other companies. Typically, what's widely available is 165, 170, 172 and a half, up to about 180. And in theory, it depends on your leg length. I mean, if you can imagine a really short rider, and suppose you gave her long crank arms, when her knee is at the top of the crank, it's going to hit her in the chin. So a crank arm that's too long is going to put too much stress on your knee at that upper point. If you surf around the web a little bit, you can find, I think they're called nomographs, where you take your height and you do a bunch of stuff, and it'll tell you what crank arm length is recommended. Now, most manufacturers have already done that on their bikes by saying, smaller bikes, we're going to use 165. We get up to a really big bike, maybe we'll go up to 175. So they've taken a lot of the guesswork out of that. And it seems to be working pretty well. I mean, you can find pros and cons of people saying long is better, no, short is better. So I don't think there's a magic bullet on crank arm length. Sorry, I couldn't give you the formula. Hello.
So when I am riding, I'm touring. I'm on some roads, but mostly trails, and I'm doing 50, 70-mile days with a 35-pound bike. Is it possible to get a touring/trail bike close, 10, 15 pounds lighter than that without being worried I'm in the woods and I'm going to hit something and have a catastrophic failure? Or
you mean,
or have to pay, like, is there a price point in there that, or a material I should be looking for? Since we know I'm going to be getting a new bike.
If you get to that point where you're ready to address the bike with the top tube, there's a new category of bicycle coming out. They call them gravel bikes. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun, really. But these are bikes that are really road bikes with wider tires on them and more brake clearance so that you can ride them easily both on road and on packed trails. They're really, in a sense, kind of like a randonneur bike in terms of where they can go and what they can do. And the gearing on them is a little bit lower. So, I mean, if you're looking for something a little bit lighter, a little bit more versatile, but something that's still rugged, I would consider that category.
What's that called again?
Gravel, G-R-A-V-E-L, that's the category. And most dealers who know what's going on, if you walk in and say, what are you guys carrying in the way of gravel bikes, should have an answer for you. But it's a great category because it's really versatile. I mean, you know, why should you be locked to the road or locked to hard-packed trails? With the right wheels and right tires, you can ride dirt all day long and love it.
Well, because my first real bike was basically when they invented hybrids, which basically meant a really heavy steel bike that they threw on half knobbies with a rolling resistance that just about killed me.
Right. Yeah. This category gets around that because people are becoming more savvy about rolling resistance and tire size. It's a perfect example of men getting older. I mean, it sounds so funny, but when you think about it, I mean, compact cranksets, which are double cranksets, but they're like 50-34 instead of, say, 53-39. It's just lower gearing. I mean, really, it's for people who didn't want to say, by God, I need a triple. So, you know, you can still go on the club rides and hang out with the guys, and the compact's cool. And the same thing's starting to happen now with tires. We used to all ride 23-millimeter tires on our road bikes. But, I mean, we've known forever that a wider tire, surprise, has lower rolling resistance than a narrow tire, you know, up to a certain point. And now, voila, bikes are now coming out that'll take 28-millimeter tires because you'll be more comfortable and you'll have less rolling resistance, and nobody will laugh at you. It's very neat how this is all coming around. I love it.
I just wanted to give, we were talking about bike shops and finding the right one, which is tough. But I want to give a little shout out to people who are thinking of buying bikes and calling a bike builder, like a private person. And I ordered a bike over the phone. And honestly, he asked me questions about my body that like I had never even actually thought of. So it was pretty shocking, but the bike came and it was perfect. And I think because he did understand the geometry and the science behind it, and it was a touring bike.
Who did you order from?
Bruce Gordon.
Oh, well, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, say he's rough. I almost, like, didn't know how to handle him. But, you know, it was, the bike was delivered out west. I got it out west, rode it the whole way across the country on your saddle. And I just literally fell in love with that bike. It's still, like, the best thing in my life. And I did spend more, but you will go through. And for the lady who was saying I ride trails and 10 or 15 mile rides, if you get a bike that you fall in love with, that will change so quickly that you will want the next bike so soon. You could ask yourself,
right,
like, should I just get the bike that's going to let me grow? And this bike was way better than me as a rider. But it let me grow as a rider.
That's exactly how I sell my bikes now. I rarely meet my customers. They're all over the United States, and we do it back and forth through emails and through these questions and answers that are eventually like a puzzle falling into place. But I think when you're working with an experienced builder, they have a feel immediately for what's going to work and what's not going to work and when they're about to get into hot water and need to put the brakes on. You do pay more for it, but as you mentioned, it's an investment. And it's, you know, it's your buddy for life.
So I've heard a couple things about, or great things about your saddles, but, and I know that saddles are, you know, generally supposed to be harder and they will be more comfortable for you, but do you have any other general pointers about what I should be looking for a saddle that would be comfortable for me besides just sitting on a bunch of them?
Yeah, saddles are tough because it's like, wow, you know, one woman's great saddle is another woman's total disaster. I think the first thing you need to ask yourself is, what's the problem with your existing saddle? You know, where is the issue there? Because I found a lot of times that saddle problems are often caused by bike fit problems. There's nothing wrong with the saddle, but the issue is with the bike fit itself. And that's especially true when discomfort from the saddle comes from the front of the saddle, the nose of the saddle. You feel like that's an issue. Usually that's a sign right there that you're leaning forward a little bit too much, your pelvis rocks forward. I don't know if that's the issue that you're having or not.
I'm a very amateur rider. I'm actually looking for my first bike. My husband rides a lot and has done centuries and all sorts of different things, and I'm trying to get in with the crowd because the whole family rides. And
right.
My whole thing is that I get on a bike and I'm just so uncomfortable sitting on the seat that
yeah.
I just like can't go more than a couple miles because I'm so uncomfortable. And I've tried different things in different people's bikes, mostly because I haven't liked it, so I haven't, you know, thought to invest in it. So just kind of figuring out where I should go. But I think you're right. I think just in terms of getting a bike that actually fits me, my actual body may help.
That would help. The other thing, too, is a lot of dealers these days, a lot of manufacturers like Terry does this, Sella Italia does this, they have demo saddles at dealers. And you can take a demo saddle and put it on your bike and ride it and try it without, you know, having this collection in your closet of saddles that don't work. So I would definitely look for a dealer that'll let you do that. And some places like Specialized has taken this body geometry concept all the way to measuring width of pelvis and all this stuff and then recommending a saddle based on that.
Do handlebars come in different widths, too?
Oh, boy, do they ever. Yeah. You can get handlebars as narrow. And you're talking about a drop bar? Okay, I'll start with a drop bar. You can get drop bars as narrow as 34 centimeters, all the way up to maybe 44 or so. You can also get them with, you know, different amounts of drops, so you don't reach down quite so far when you're in the drops, or reach, so you're not reaching quite so far to get to the brake levers. Normally, you'll find that the flat bars come in one size, and you get a hacksaw to make them whatever width you want. Make sure you leave enough room for the grips and the brake shifters, the brakes and the shifters after you do that. But traditionally, manufacturers finally realize, why are we making flat bars in so many widths? Just give the guy a hacksaw and let him cut it down. And that's what chops do.
When you look for a handmade bike and you're a casual rider, what kind of price point is reasonable?
Well, speaking for myself, my price points start around $3,500. And I think it sounds shocking, but I think when you consider that it is a hand-built bike, some guy standing there doing every bit of it and the design is unique and all that, it's really quite a reasonable price. I mean, you can go buy off-the-peg bicycles for $5,000 or $6,000 that aren't handmade, but I would expect to pay that as a starting point, really. And it'll go up depending on how many, you know, like a Bruce Gordon, a full touring bike with tons of brazons on it for this, that, and the other is going to cost a little bit more. You can affect the price a little bit by the choice of components that go on it.
Well, why did my 5'4" daughter claim to be perfectly happy on my 19-inch mountain bike? And is there a downside to that if she were to ride it quite a bit?
Okay, wait, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
My 5'4" daughter claimed to be perfectly happy riding my 19-inch mountain bike. The seat was all the way down, of course. But would there be a downside to riding that very much?
Would there be a downside for her to continue to ride it?
Yes.
No, not if she's happy. The only downside I can see is, can she get off it quickly without killing herself on the top tube? But, I mean, the great thing about being that age is she's got a ton of flexibility. You know, she's in a totally different ballpark. The other thing, too, is, I mean, it may not be a great fit. She may not realize it because she's just running roughshod with the enthusiasm and vigor of youth. And if she gets older, it might not be as appropriate, but heck, she's having a good time, go for it.
Thank you.
Would you comment on the traditional top tube for women design versus the straight tube, and why did they ever come up with such an inferior design? Structurally, it's inferior. Do you agree?
I do agree, yeah, yeah. That traditional women's design is noodly and whippy. I mean, it has nothing to keep it from twisting like this in that plane. But women's skirts were the big issue. You know, that's back in the 18-whatevers, you know, when... There is another issue, though. I'll tell you what that issue is. It's not the skirt issue now, but what happens is a lot of women get older. Getting a leg over the saddle is a huge issue. And you get women who are getting into their, Lord, 70s and 80s, who have been avid riders their entire lives, and now they find their love screeching to a halt because the manufacturer only makes that kind of bike in an 80-pound pink with flowers version. But I agree with you. But you know what? When you're at that point, a little bit of flex like that isn't a big deal.
I'm sorry to jump in, but like I think that's the point that I was trying to make. Like if you're young and athletic and maybe have the you know, are driven to find a bike, I think it's easier to find a bike. But when I think of women of all shapes and sizes and incomes that are trying to get bikes and they get thrown something that it's not comfortable or useful and then they drop it, when I think there should be the ones that, you know, should have a little bit more support. And, like, that was just, you know, the point. Like, when you get older, you're not going to be able to. So, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Any more questions? All right, well, thank you, Georgina Terry, for coming and speaking for us.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thank you all for coming out and staying for the Q&A. We hope to see you at another Cafe Side. Have a good night.